What's kicking chickens? Welcome back to Can We Fix It? I'm your host, Maura Walsh, joined as always by my lovely and talented co-host, Jennifer the Vulpinator Douglas. How you doing, lady?
I'm doing all right. I got my power back today, so I'm happy.
Woo, woo! I feel like the storm specifically affected you and your backyard, and that was it. Like, that was so mean.
It was horrible. It was terrible. Actually, I made out really well. I did not lose tooth this time. And that's really all I cared about, so I'm happy. Nice. Everyone around me got screwed, so I feel badly for them. I just lost power.
Not so terrible. Living in the boondocks. It's a weird and wonderful life. We are joined today by Representative Jose Batista. Thank you so much for coming on again. It is lovely to have you back. How you been?
Great to be here. We had a great time the first time. Happy to be here a second time.
Absolutely. We're happy to have you. We have decided that the next couple of episodes are going to be police reform based. We had Harrison Tuttle on last week, who's the executive director of BLM PAC RI or BLM RI PAC. Just like an obnoxiously talented and smart young man that like made me question what the fuck I was doing when I was 22. But today specifically, I want to get into the Sales Street incident, of which the body camera footage has just been released to the public, as well as the Providence External Review Authority. Now that you're on the outside of it, what your recommendations are for what they should be doing. Maybe play a little dictator of para if we want to do that. Because it's abundantly clear at this point in time that the way that things are going is not sustainable. We can't just have police out here whooping ass like it's a fucking bar fight in Roadhouse. Like, there's got to be some kind of fucking standard for this shit. So let's get into it with a little bit of background, shall we? When did all this go down? All the Sales Street stuff? It's in your district, right?
Sales Street, I think, happened maybe, a good 4 to 6 weeks ago now.
Okay.
And it is in my district. It's right by Mary Fogarty Elementary School. So right there in my district, District 12.
And what precipitated the need for what appeared to be 400,000 police officers to attend that scene? Was there like a mass murder or like a bunch of shootings like repeatedly at the same time?
Yeah. Bomb threat.
No. Bomb threat.
No, so it wasn't anything quite as serious. From what I understand, there were two families and two houses next to each other that had been going back and forth. I don't know if they have actually fought or if they were threatening to fight each other, but the police had gone a couple of times. And as you see in the body worn camera, I mean, it's a hot summer day. There's a bunch of folks outside. Tensions are running high. And so I think the police were called in to try to keep the peace. And, I think the video that was released was about an hour long. And you see the police are there for a while. And, clearly there's a lot of folks outside. It's really loud. But at some point, things just go south and the pepper spray comes out, the handcuffs come out, and a few things that shouldn't have happened happen.
So speaking on those few things that shouldn't have happened, specifically being children were assaulted by police officers. And we're talking children as young as like 3 years old, 4 years old, getting pepper sprayed, young adults being handcuffed and arrested, which I don't see how that is keeping the peace per se, unless the families were pepper spraying each other prior to the police arriving. Like, I don't.
Yeah. I mean, with regard to that, I would say two things. Like, speaking a little bit more broadly, there's two words that kind of stand out to me when I look at this situation and when I think about what went wrong. And those two words are probably relevant in every case that goes wrong with the police. And one of those words is poverty, and the other word is power. And sadly, I think when you have a situation where those two forces come into play with each other, bad things happen, right? I think for the majority of that incident, and I'm just giving my two cents as an attorney, as somebody who was the executive director of police oversight, I think for most of the time that the police were there, they were trying to get the situation under control. And it was tough. I mean, I don't know exactly what it was that the folks were fighting about or mad about, but there were some pretty angry folks out there. there are some decisions that the police made that knowingly made that situation worse, which is one thing that stood out to me. There was one situation where you see in the body worn camera, a police officer is taking an order from a superior, and the superior tells him, okay, write these people up and give them a ticket for, I forgot what it was. And the officer said, hey, you know, we write these people up, this is going to cause a riot. And the superior responds, well, I don't care. Write them up anyway. Right? And so you think about something like that. Like, if you are aware, you know, without getting too into the weeds of policy, but if you're aware that something that you have the power to do is going to have that sort of an impact, you might want to, you know, I don't care is not the appropriate response, right? So that was one thing that stood out to me. And then another, you know, once the police are not able to kind of get a hold on things, that's when you see the power come out. And I'm pretty sure I was, you know, watching the video, the police officers are trying to tell people, you know, get in the house, calm down, stop yelling at each other. And at one point, a young person responds to the police. And again, I'm just saying what I saw. I'm not, you know, swearing by blood that this is the actual fact here. But I think one young person responds to the police, you know, shut the F up, right? The police is trying to get them inside the house, trying to get them shot. And the young person responds to him and says, shut the F up. And at that moment, you see the police officer just lunge towards the kid and arrest him. Now, on the one hand, again, you can look at a situation like that, and it would be nice if citizens didn't treat police officers that way, didn't use that sort of language. But last time I checked, we all had a First Amendment right. And the First Amendment does not just cover the things that we want to hear, the things that we like to hear. The First Amendment freedom of speech says that we can say almost anything we want, as long as we're not creating some sort of imminent danger. And so when you dig at the root of a lot of these issues between the police and the community, I think one of the questions that consistently comes up is, what is it that the police actually have the power to do? And oftentimes you'll see them go astray of that. And that's where you see the arrest of the young people in this case, the OC spray of children in this case. And I think unless we, you know, get at the real root of these issues, we're never going to stop these incidents from happening again, you know?
Right. And I think that you make a very good point with the poverty and power thing. I mean, I experienced this a lot as a waitress. When your wage is $2, $3 an hour, the people who are tipping you then feel like they own you. Anybody who's worked in retail can tell you that, like, they've been told to shut the fuck up on multiple occasions by the general public. The general public are horrible fucking people. I'm sorry. Some of you are our listeners, and I guarantee that you are not nice enough to your fucking waitresses. Nobody ever is. But we hear, you know, these kind of things all the time. And we, as waitresses, as cashiers, as, you know, bartenders and whatever, are not allowed to pop the fuck off and, like, slap some cuffs on somebody every time that, like, somebody makes our job uncomfortable. And not to be a bitch here, but, like, you signed up to be a keeper of the peace. You are showing up. Nobody is calling the police on their fucking birthday. Right? Nobody's calling the police to be like, hey guys, I have extra pie. Did you guys want to come by and hang out? Like, no. You call the police on the worst fucking day of your life or the worst day of somebody else's life. The police do not get called to, like, party fun situations. The police get called to tent situations. And not to be a dick, but you signed up for that. And if you are then going to lose your shit when a teenager has a fucking attitude with you, like, dear Lord, high school principals manage to do it without laying hands on people. Like, I understand that you're an elected official and that you have to have, like, a diplomatic opinion on this. But for me, that didn't look that reasonable. That looked like a group of people who had no idea how to fucking de-escalate at all, taking an uncomfortable situation and making it worse. And when it comes to poverty, like, heat waves are not great for our poor neighborhoods. Like, when you can sit in your nice air-conditioned home and ride this shit out, it's one thing. But, like, this heat is oppressive. It is maddening. And when you do not have the resources to cool down, like, it will literally drive you fucking insane. And, I mean, it really just is, once again, a matter of, like, giving people the resources that they need. Like, we talked last week with Harrison Tuttle about the fact that, you know, crime has been historically low in Providence. And that, I'm sure, is not a coincidence, considering we all got stimulus packages and eviction moratoriums and a little more financial stability in our lives in a time when we have not seen that, or at least in my grown adult life, I haven't seen the government fucking actively, like, tangibly helping people in trouble. It was shocking. But it turns out that when people have resources and have enough, they don't have fucking crimes. So if these people, you know, if we weren't burning the climate, if it weren't 4 billion degrees out every fucking day, like, maybe we wouldn't have as many of these explosive episodes of, like, listen, I've had neighbors that I did not fucking care for, and I could see how if I did not have an air-conditioned bedroom that shit could have gone terribly awry. But I think that it is the police's responsibility to fucking de-escalate a situation. And if you're going there to quote unquote break up a fight, how the fuck does, like, pepper spray and arresting kids break, like, that seems much more argumentative to me than necessary. But again, I used to be a nanny. I worked at a daycare. Like, I am now a mother and a teacher. Like, I know how to actually talk down tense situations, because I've had to learn that instead of just, like, carrying a gun and behaving as though that makes me the all-being, all-knowing person in charge. Sorry, long tangent, but worth it. Jen.
No, but you hit several nails right on the head. I'm thinking you should, have you ever thought about running for public office?
Never again. My life is magical right now. I honestly, like, I got a couple of friends who are, you know, struggling and deciding whether or not they're going to run again. And I won't talk to them right now because I'm afraid that I'm going to, like, take good people out of office just because I'm like, yo, it's dope on the outside. Everything is fucking tight. I can do what I want. Nobody yells at me. It's nice.
Yeah, but you clearly still have to talk. I mean, these are really complicated public policy issues, and navigating them is difficult. Discussing them intelligently is difficult. And I appreciate you creating the space, because I think what you see too many times on behalf of city leaders and the police is that they want to end the conversation. They want to jump to conclusions, close the book, and that's it. When really what it takes to learn from this is to have the sort of conversation that you and I are having right now, and to really dig deep, because you're right, you know, it's tough out here. And even for somebody who grew up like me in South Providence and, you know, was on the low income side of things, like, growing up, not that I'm necessarily in a high income now, but, you know, as a grown-up, my life was different than it was as a kid. Like, it's difficult to navigate these issues, right? And people are not always going to be able to articulate, listen, you know, I need a mental health counselor. I need support because I'm going through trauma. People don't necessarily articulate that, right? And so I think you're right. It's up to us. It's up to leaders. It's up to community leaders. And in the perfect world, if police were doing the right thing, you know, to really navigate and understand that, as opposed to, you know, trying to impose our power on them, and then when they don't comply, punish them or arrest them or anything like that. You know, like I said, I want to give them some credit for trying to de-escalate that for the first, I don't know, 25, 35 minutes. And then all of a sudden, something just snapped and everything went south. And it's in those moments that, those are the moments you really have to unpack and figure out what went wrong. Because luckily in this case, I mean, I'm not going to say people didn't get hurt. People did get hurt. Sadly, I think our standard for brutality is so desensitized that if somebody doesn't die, then we don't think anything bad happened, right? But
right.
We want to prevent that from happening. I mean, that's something I'm concerned about. You have, you know, this most recent case, yet again, more body-worn camera, more violence towards young people to the extent of spitting at them. And sometimes I ask myself, I don't know what it's going to take to snap people into where they need to be. Like, I hope it doesn't take some sort of fatal case where somebody dies in Providence, because my sense is that, honestly, we haven't learned anything. And I say we collectively, the leaders of the city, the leaders of the police, even some of the leaders at the state level, what have we learned from George Floyd, from Joseph Hanley, from anything and everything that's happened in between? Sometimes I feel like it's nothing.
Right. Well, so there are a couple of things that I do want to touch on, right? So specifically that the Providence Police Academy is entirely separate from every other police academy. If you are a cop in Cumberland, Cranston, Coventry, Pawtucket, you go to RIMPA, the Rhode Island Municipal Police Academy. If you are training to be a Providence police officer, you go to your own separate academy. And I think that there is something to be said for training and or lack thereof. Let's get personal with it, right? I was dating a gentleman who at the time was a lovely young man, a banker. He was, my neighbor, very nice guy. And as we were dating, he got accepted into the Rhode Island Municipal Police Academy. And I watched them turn this very nice young man into a suspicious, paranoid police officer. It is an indoctrination period, you know, where they, you know, kind of make it feel like it's you versus everybody else. Like cops are the good guys and the public is the bad guys. Or, you know, it's, you know, ideally certain members of the public are the bad guys, but it's very much taught that it is an us versus them mentality. We would go out to dinner and he would have to face the exit. And I would be like, who's going to fucking assassinate us in an IHOP, dude? Like, what the fuck? You know, but like, they're always ready because like being a cop is so dangerous. And that's where you get, you know, these ridiculous TikTok videos of like Officer Becky crying in the fucking drive-thru of McDonald's. Like, I'm just, my sandwich took too long and I'm afraid that they spit in my food and I can't even eat it. Like, no, that's just a regular people problem, honey. Like sometimes drive-thrus take long, but like when you treat the general public like animals, yeah, then you got to kind of worry when you got to deal with them again in like any other fucking context. So I think a lot of it can be explained by just the academy itself. It's very weird. It's very secretive. And, you know, I was just looking at RIMPA. Like I've heard that, you know, the Providence Police Academy is like an entirely different animal. And then we also jump into, Jen, what was it, like 7% of the budget, the police budget goes to training?
Mm-hmm. It was a very, very small.
It was event. Like, yeah, it was like 7% of the overall, you know, $40 billion that we fucking give them goes to training.
Right. And the rest goes to what? Militarization?
The rest goes to personnel, overtime, supplies, things like that. And it really is.
Right.
Like, you know, we don't have to just talk about defunding the police. Let's talk about fucking reallocating funds from the police. You know what I mean? Let's talk exactly. about taking some jobs away from the police. I say all the time that it's unfair to expect cops to be this many things and be good at it. They shouldn't be social workers and traffic directors and traffic enforcers and, you know, car inspectors. Like what is it when a cop gives you a tag because your light is out? Like that's basically a roving mechanic being like, hey, that doesn't work anymore. You know what I mean? Like, there are just so many jobs that cops do not need to be doing. And that if we pared them down, maybe they could do some of those jobs well instead of doing all of those jobs fucking poorly.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I mean, when we talk about first of all, there's the defunding the police movement, in which I think is a really, in my opinion, I don't want to speak for anybody or misinterpret anybody, but the way I hear those words, I think it's really complicated, right? The idea of defunding the police. I've never been in support of the complete or immediate defunding of the police, but completely reimagining what it is that the police department does. As you were just saying a moment ago, Maura, like there's no reason to make them in charge of so many different things. I think that could go a long way towards making our communities safer, right? And what worries me when I think about what we're seeing on the street and what we see in the body worn cameras is that I was a public defender. Between the years 2015 and 2016, in Rhode Island courts, I saw the Providence cases, the Protected cases, the Wasaki cases. I saw how police are interacting with people across the board in the inner city. And in court, there's an extraordinary amount of deference paid to the police. Oh, that's what the police report says? Well, that's what happened. And now we are starting to see a lot more of these body-worn cameras. And you see that so much of what is on these cameras magically does not make its way onto a police report, right? There's so much that's left out of it. It's like, well, wait a minute. How are we judging and in many cases convicting people in court of these petty misdemeanors and nonsense charges when there's so much more that we don't know yet, right? And so completely agree with you. We need to reimagine what it is that policing does, especially when we're allocating something like $95 million to it in the city of Providence, and 90% of it is going to personnel, something that we've admitted. We heard it admitted at the last city council meeting that more police does not necessarily equal more safety, but it makes people feel safer, right? And so we really would need to be asking ourselves, whose feelings is it that we're worried about, and what cost is it that we're willing to pay to make people feel better? You know what I mean?
Exactly. And then, unfortunately, you bring in more police, it doesn't necessarily make people safer. It gives the illusion of safety to the people that we were talking about that feel unsafe, which are
white people,
you know, generally the white landowners in the area, the people who are feeling unsafe. But it makes the people who are targeted by the police, who are generally the poorer people of color, more unsafe. And that right there is a failure of the system.
No, correct. You know, what's one of the most remarkable things that I'm beginning to think more and more is that sadly, the police department is more of a political institution than anything else. When crime is down, when gun violence is down, you'll hear the police say, oh, it's because our policies are working. And then when crime is up, or when you have some stuff happen, some incidents happen like they have this summer, you hear the police say, well, it's because we need to double down on our policies. There's never a time where you hear them recognize that their policies maybe are not working. Either they're working or we need to do more. And it's just like, that can't be the entire conversation, you know?
Yeah. My dad used to say of me, frequently wrong, but never in doubt. And that is absolutely how I feel about the Providence Police Department. Like, they are so confident in their fucking wrongness. And I agree with you. And I also feel like they don't recognize that it would benefit them and benefit their lives and benefit their safety as well. Like, most police injuries happen during traffic stops. So, like, why are we having police do traffic stops? We already have automated, you know, red light cameras. And, you know, in Providence, we've got speed bumps and the speed cameras and all that fun stuff. There's no need to have police doing that. Again, as I said, like, we don't need to have police showing up to, you know, domestic, not necessarily domestic violence, but like every city altercation. Like, you know who's really great at that? Mental health experts. Like, they do it with, you know, much less reasonable people, without hurting anybody or pepper spraying anybody in the face. So, like, there are experts in all of these fields that could already do these jobs a million times better. And I think that what we, you know, really need to pare down on is, like, what is it exactly that we want police to be doing? For me, I would say solving crimes. And that's
right, more
about it.
You know, have them actually solve the crimes that do happen, because nobody has the ability to solve them before they happen. That's not happening.
Right. So stop trying to be Tom Cruise in Minority Report, and stop trying to be, I don't know, I can't name a good cop because they all, like, slam people's heads on desks and shit. I'm not going to say, like, Law and Order, like, no. Those are terrible people. Please don't do that. But you know what I mean? Like, you could still do cop stuff. Just, you don't have to, you know, scare the ever-loving shit out of children.
Yeah. And, you know, I want the police to understand, too, we want these issues solved because we don't want them harmed either. You know, it's not just the people in the streets and the people that they're supposed to protect that are getting hurt. We don't want to see them hurt either. And that's where all of this is heading. And it's not good for anyone. This is not conducive to healthy communities, the way any of this is working right now. And we have to do something before people get hurt in both sides of this. And it's not good.
Okay. So what has Providence External Review Authority, PERA's reaction been to this most recent body cam footage? Do you know, Representative?
Do I know what?
Do you know what PERA's response has been to this most recent body footage now that you're not there?
I have no idea what PERA is up to.
And in a perfect world, and I know that we talked about this last time, but I'm sure that there are people joining this conversation for the first time that need to know this. What is Paris supposed to be doing in an instance like this?
I think, generally speaking, I mean, they're supposed to be overseeing the work of police, right? And so there is a department within the police department that takes complaints about police misconduct, the Internal Affairs Bureau. It's kind of a novel idea to have police policing themselves. And so that's why you have a board like Paris, so you can have civilians overseeing the work of police. And I'll tell you that we ran into, you know, a lot of people paid attention at the end when I got fired and I released the tapes. But the reality is that we were bumping heads literally from day one. And the issue was, or at least one of the sticking points was, how independent should Para be? And the reality is that neither the police department nor the city, for that matter, was interested in Para being truly independent. In other words, they wanted Para to sit in a corner, literally inside the police department, and kind of do whatever it is that the police allowed them to do. And I always thought that that was kind of counterintuitive, right? It's almost like, imagine, you know, forget about the police. Imagine I was a bank regulator, and my job is to make sure that nobody's doing any funny business at the bank. But the people controlling what I have access to are the people who work at the bank. Wouldn't you see a problem with that? You know, these folks have a vested interest in maintaining the status quo. And so it was clear to me from the very beginning that, again, neither the police nor the city is interested in having truly honest, independent oversight of the police department. And one thing you're going to hear in response to that is, oh, well, civilians aren't trained to do what we do. They don't understand what we do. And to that point, I would flip the script and say, police officers are public servants in the same way that politicians are public servants. Could you imagine, Maura, if when your constituent or anybody's constituents complained about the budget or about whatever law we were passing, and our response was, oh, well, you simple-minded folks don't understand what it is. You've never been trained on the budget the way we are. It's their budget. It's their money. Just like this city and the way it's governed is up to us. And so I don't buy that argument that we're not trained. Sure, there are some elements of policing that are specialized and some deference in that sense, but I don't think it takes a master's degree to see somebody's face getting pushed into the pavement or somebody, some police officer losing control.
And spitting on a kid and being like, there's gotta be a better way. It's like those fucking infomercials. You know what I mean? And when it comes to what you just said, I don't know. I kind of feel like there are some of our old colleagues in that room that would totally answer a constituent email like that, right? Just like, you're dumb. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. How about you sit down? I said that, not you. You were just here when I said it. It's not your fault. I'm not trying to get you in trouble. But yeah, no, I totally agree. Like the idea that like policing is so complicated that like we couldn't possibly understand like the intricacies. I'm like, nah, I'm watching all this body cam footage. You pretty much just show up, be like arrogant and rude for a few minutes and then start pushing people. I could do that. Like that's mad. If I were allowed to push children at work, oh my God. Fights would be solved so much quicker, but I'm not, obviously, because that's fucked up and wrong, and sometimes you gotta just use your words. Now, I do want us to play Dictator of Para, right? And, like, if we could, you know, have some accountability over the Providence police, what would that look like? We obviously know what it doesn't look like. It doesn't look like setting your office up next to the police commissioner's desk and being like, can I hold you guys accountable now, please? And then being like, no, not right now. So like, what is your idea for what, you know, in a perfect world, what that would look like?
I would say at least two really easy things. At least one easy thing. The second one may not be that easy, but The first one is something we tried to do and got fought with from the very beginning. And that is there needs to be some little kiosk in the police department, some little computer where somebody from Para, preferably the executive director, has the authority to go into that computer and pull any police report, any body worn camera, any piece of information whatsoever, uninhibited, at any time. And anytime we propose that at the police department, you should see the way people will look at you. They'll look at you like you had 8 heads on. Like, Why do you want that information? Why do you want it unfiltered? Like, and my response was, why not? Right? That's what we're supposed to do. And so, I heard this on an episode of Suits, and they say being a doctor and being a lawyer are the same in the sense that it's your job to keep on pressing until you find where it hurts.
Mm.
And that was an issue that we pressed. That was an issue that we pressed that I know the police department, that it hurt them. They didn't want us to have that sort of unfiltered access, and the question is why. Number two, if we're going to, quote-unquote, defund anything, I would say you can have remarkable changes in policing if you completely eradicated their internal affairs bureau, their process for looking at complaints. Take all that money, whatever it is, and invest it in para, and make it a truly civilian-centered, community-centered process to look over police conduct. They're going to lose their minds because they don't want us governing ourselves, basically, how we want our communities to be policed. When in reality, it's a question for us, right? It's not for the police to decide how the community should be policed. Ultimately, it's the community through elections, through civic participation, through meetings, and that sort of thing. And so if you did those two things, I guarantee you so many of the problems that we have, if not eliminated altogether, be substantially reduced.
Word. This is all very, very impressive, and we are appreciative of all of it. I do want to ask if there's anything that you want to plug right now, or like what are you up to in the off season? Are you running again? Like a lot of non-police related questions.
Am I running in for re-election?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a great first term. There's so much to learn. It's so humbling to be, part of the legislature and to, have conversations on the daily with reps from, I sit next to Deborah Girio, who's from Jamestown.
Yep.
You know, the chances that I think or talk about Jamestown before being a rep were very little. But here I am sitting next to her every day, and I get to learn about Jamestown and East Greenwich and all these places that I never would have think about. I mean, I'm a true Rhode Islander. Like, you drive anywhere more than 15 minutes, you got to pack a lunch.
Yeah.
So I've enjoyed it. We've got some good things done. One story that I tell to basically summarize my first year is that, you start off and you get all, at least this particular year, we got a lot of good bills off the ground, the minimum wage bill, the college scholarship bill, the Act on Climate bill, one of the most aggressive bills in more than a generation. And even if you don't try to do it, you start feeling pretty good. Right, you start getting a little full of yourself, if you will.
You leave
the ground just long enough to forget that the state house is a bubble, and that most people are not, glued to Twitter all day long and following the media all day long. And that to me was made apparent on May 13th of this year, when even though we had passed all those great bills, we had the worst shooting in the history of the city of Providence right here in my backyard, like four streets away from my house. And it was such a moment, right? Because number one, that incident was politicized immediately, right? Whenever it's violence perpetrated by young people, oh man, we need to come down hard on them. And, you start to see it immediately. And it made me realize that, okay, we can pass good bills and get good legislation. But the reality is that there's so much work left to do to fix the Providence schools and have young people feel like they have opportunity, right? Because there's young people that are engaged in violence. Number one, I'm not justifying it in any way, shape, or form, but kind of like we were talking about at the beginning of the segment about poverty, right? We need to, if we really want to have a permanent long-term solution, as opposed to a short-term scratch the itch, scratch the emotion solution, we need to understand why it is these things are happening. And the point that I try to make is that for every 15, 16, 17-year-old that is engaged in violence now, we failed those kids like 10 years ago when they were 6, 7, 8 years old. And so if we want to address this, we got to start with fixing the bigger problem, right? I was on a Spanish radio about a couple weeks ago, and it was one of the toughest interviews I've ever done on that station. And the question that kept coming up, what are we going to do right now? What are we going to do right now? And sure, we need to do stuff right now to fix it, but a lot of these problems are a long time coming. And unless and until we appreciate that and really fine tune our mind to that, we're not ever going to be satisfied. We're not ever going to fix it.
Mm. Ugh, such a depressing note for us to end on. That's so accurate. That's the thing. It can't all be kimonos and cocktails, you guys. Sometimes it's got to be police brutality and cold hard truths. Rep, it was amazing having you on. Thank you so much for coming on the show. If all of you guys enjoyed this, please make sure you hit up our Patreon at patreon.com/canwefixit, where you can become a monthly sponsor, or our Venmo, Maura-Walsh-3, where you can throw us your extra doll hairs. Don't buy a coffee. Give Jen and I the money. We'll do terrible things with it, but also you'll know that you made us smile and giggle maniacally. Jen, you got anything to plug?
Plug Rhode Island Rank this week.
Oh, yeah. Rye Rank has some dope new stuff popping off. So make sure you guys check out where your elected officials are in terms of their environmental votes. Good luck, Batista. And as always, stay safe, wash your hands, and go be a good neighbor.